Ladies and gentlemen, sorry for that delay here. Technical issues, but we got it. At least Tim's got it. Thanks, Tim.
No problem.
So we've got a few hundred of you guys here and gals, and we have probably about 1,000 questions. So first of all, I just want to say thank you for getting here, and I'm going to get right to it. It's hot here in Seattle. We've had record-breaking weather, so I'm nice and toasty. I have a little sauna going on. So this session is fully recorded, and it will be available as a recording in CNL.org Learning Center, and the recordings are available to members only. So if you're a member of CNL.org, just log into your dashboard and you can find it there. And if you're not a member of CNL.org, you can become one, and we've also made some presentations available for free as well. We had a conference that I did there this spring that was top rated 100% approval, which is amazing. That was really impressive turnout and a great turnout. So that presentation is free, and I made the cancer presentation for free, made a pregnancy conference for free. So all those conferences where I flew around the world presenting, those are all available to members at no charge. So I'd like to put them on YouTube for free, but I'm concerned about what the FDA and whoever else watching might have to say about all this free content on YouTube. So we have it behind a protective wall for you guys. Okay. So there was a question I saw on there for what is my favorite methylation test as of now. So is HDRI, Health Diagnostics Research Institute methylation lab, is that still my go-to? And no, it's not. Fortunately, it's not. My go-to these days is looking at doctor's data methylation profile. I find that to be pretty useful. And then ordering a organic acids test along with an amino acid profile if needed. Or you can just use a NutriVal test. A NutriVal FMV is a first morning void 24-hour test. Actually, it's not 24 hours, it's FMV. So NutriVal FMV Genova test. And that looks at a lot of things. It looks at red blood cell fatty acids. It looks at organic acids. It looks at amino acids. It looks at glutathione. And then you order a specialty lab looking at doctor's data methylation profile. Rose and Tim, can you please make sure your mic is muted? I'm hearing background noise. Please make sure your stuff is muted. And we have to make sure that when you're working with patients, you're not just ordering a methylation test, because methylation is a certain pathway in your patients, and you cannot treat methylation in isolation. If you do that, you're going to get a backfire. So if you have MTHFR or COMT or whatever new genetic polymorphism out there, and you want to treat that specific polymorphism and you order a methylation test, or even if you order a genetic test, you can't treat methylation in isolation, and you cannot treat a genetic test in isolation. It is going to come back and haunt you. You might have success in the beginning, but in a few months or a few days or a few weeks, it might come back and bite you. So another one. Question, which 5-methylfolate would increase glutamate more than others? I'm assuming you're asking the question if the gnosis methylfolate that's bound to glucosamine would increase glutamate more than the 5-methylfolate that's bound to calcium, which is the Merck form of methylfolate. And I would say they're probably both equivalent, the amount of calcium and the amount of glucosamine that you're getting that's bound to the methylfolate is in micrograms. I mean, you're not talking to much here, so it's insignificant, so I wouldn't worry about that. They both have the potential to increase glutamate. So I'm going to jump to Facebook here. There's some very popular questions. One had 27 likes. And it's from Kathy Longen, and I have heterozygous MTHFR C677, but have side effects when taking methylfolate and methylcobalamin. Join the club. also has three homozygous MAOA SNPs, homozygous COM-T Valmet, homozygous CBS699, and several heterozygous SNPs of the MTRR gene. So confused on how to treat all of these various genetic conditions, any ideas on supplementation and diet? I have a lot of sinus drainage from mold and fungus allergies. And so before I address that, Tim, if you can look at see if your microphone is on and mute yourself. There's a little thing up here. You can mute it. That would be appreciated. And Rose, the same. I'm hearing feedback. So it's got to be one of you two, I would imagine. There we go. Much cleaner. Good. That's quality. So, Kathy, you are not alone, and that is probably why 27 people liked your comments, and I want to first address that you are having potential methylfolate and methylcobalamin side effects. Yes, you do have potential for a longer duration of your neurotransmitters to stay in circulation because of your MAOA and COM-T polymorphisms. That is allowing your neurotransmitters to stay in circulation longer, and if in combination with the MTHFR, that also slows the elimination of your neurotransmitters. So if you take methylfolate and methylcobalamin, you might be spiking your glutamate, you might be spiking your histamine. So we need to make sure, and there's other things too that I don't know. But we need to make sure that these collateral pathways are opened. And what I mean by that, let's look at this. So before I get into, before I get even into that, I want to get on my soapbox. And your question is very useful and it's very relevant, but you're not alone here. When you ask a question that you're focusing on SNPs first, that's problem number one. Problem number one is we cannot focus on SNPs first. You have to identify the main causes of problems that are from the foundation, and then you look at SNPs as another tool. So working with SNPs is like, it's like another tool for a surgeon, okay? So the surgeon has a variety of different tools prepared for them to work on their patient, all right? So SNPs is just another tool. If the surgeon works with just that one tool during surgery, what's going to happen to the patient? It's not going to be a good, successful outcome. You need to work with all the different tools. And SNPs is another tool. And SNPs is a very useful tool in the situation for disease prevention, disease potential identification, and treatment. Flow. So when you take methylcobalamin and methylfolate, you feel worse. Now, that can be related to SNPs. It can be related to these genetic polymorphisms, and it's definitely contributing. But it also could be for your biochemistry and your epigenetics, meaning is the foundation set in place for you? So let's look at that here. So I'm going to move this over here. So here are the neurotransmitters, okay? So let's blow this up a little bit more. So if you take your methylfolate and methylcobalamin, you can be increasing your dopamine and your norepinephrine, okay? So these get increased. And if you do that, and you have a MAOA SNP, which is here, and you have a COM-T SNP, which is here, your ability to eliminate your dopamine and norepinephrine is lower. And the only real effective way to get the dopamine lowered is through the sulfation pathway, which is here. Now, the sulfation pathway requires that your sulfur levels are adequate, meaning you're consuming your sulfate-containing vegetables, such as your cruciferous veggies, your broccoli, cauliflower, artichokes, asparagus, onions, and so on. And sulfur is also found in meats. Cysteine is also found in meat. So, but you have the CBS polymorphism, which is homozygous. So if you eat your sulfur-containing vegetables and you have a CBS 699 variant, then you might also get into problems. But keep in mind that looking at research, research is saying that CBS-699 isn't really that big of a problem. But when you look at CBS-699 clinically, you do see that people have a problem there. And the problem has to do with sulfites. So, and if you have sulfite problems, so here's your CBS polymorphism or CBS gene. And keep in mind that the CBS gene does not have to be polymorphic or genetically altered in some way to be moving faster. There's other reasons for the CBS gene to move faster. And you can see here that promoter, that's not technically a correct term, but a promoter, let me zoom this up again. So as some of you probably know, the CBS gene polymorphism of 699 is supposed to speed it up, right? So 699 polymorphism is supposed to increase the speed of the CBS of the CBS gene. All right. So if it does that, what's going to happen? That tells you if this goes faster, then your homocysteine levels should be lower because its CBS enzyme is using homocysteine. So if it uses homocysteine and it comes down through here, then you say, well, I should be able to make more glutathione. Okay, that's possible, but it depends. What also happens is the CBS can come down here, make cysteine, and it can push it over here to the SUOX gene, which is also polymorphic, and which means it doesn't work very well. And then you increase sulfites. So if you increase sulfites, that isn't going to be good. And if you take methylcobalamin and your methylfolate and you don't feel good, what happens is you're taking your methylfolate and your methylcobalamin, you might be increasing SAM. And if your homocysteine levels are normal or elevated, you will be converting your methylfolate, methylcobalamin into SAM. And SAM is SAMe, which is the body's primary methyl donor. And SAM is also a promoter of the CBS enzyme. And you already have a polymorphic CBS-699 variant, which then is pushing the CBS variant even faster because SAM also promotes the CBS enzyme, along with zinc, inflammation, TNF-alpha is a marker of inflammation, and hydrogen peroxide. So all these things contribute to an upregulated CBS enzyme. So if you support yourself with methylfolate, methylcobalamin, and you have a slow ability to get rid of your neurotransmitters and an already faster CBS enzyme, then there's going to be some issues. So what do you do about that?
Wait a second, I'm going to close my window.
So what do you do about that? So you need to make sure that you're supporting the CBS enzyme first, and you need to make sure that you can do that by isolating the elimination of sulfites. So I would be looking first to be supplementing with molybdenum. If you've been taking molybdenum, probably 75 to 200 micrograms, 250 micrograms can be useful. There's also molybdenum found in nuts or trace mineral supplements or multivitamins. And molybdenum is the cofactor right here. Molybdenum is the cofactor to take that sulfite and turn it into sulfate, and then you can pee it out. And sulfites are problematic. They can lead to histamine. So sulfites lead to histamine production, and high histamine production can also cause problems. And look what else blocks the ability to eliminate sulfites: arsenic and tungsten. Where do you find arsenic? In your drinking water, in your rice, and in your chicken, and in supplements, sadly. So you want to make sure that supplements you buy are tested for arsenic levels, and you can request certificate of analysis and evaluate that. You also want to be looking at where your rice is coming from. You also want to be filtering your water. So in general, if you are trying to support your genetics, you're trying to look at your heterozygous 677 MTHFR, your homozygous MAO-A SNPs, your homozygous COMT SNPs, and your homozygous CBS SNPs, and you're not evaluating your gut, your lifestyle, your diet, and the environment around you, then you're going to be frustrated. And by taking methylfolate and methylcobalamin without addressing those underlying things first, it's not going to work. And at our conference this October, what we're going to address is on Sunday we have physicians from around the United States, and they're presenting cases that exactly portray what's going on with you. So in one case in particular, Dr. Neil Nathan, he's one of the pioneers in methylation dysfunction. He talks about a case with a patient who has Lyme disease, and they had celiac, and I forget the other conditions that they had. And chronic fatigue was another one. So the patient had done a lot of things already. And so then they went to methylation support. And the methylation support backfired on this patient. Didn't work. Just like with you here with methylfolate, methylcobalamin, it backfired. So they backed up. They worked on the gut. They worked on killing the Lyme. They worked on supporting the adrenals. And after they did that, the patient got better. And it wasn't only after did they start addressing the methylation again. And once they did that, the patient was able to tolerate it, and they got even better. Now, the patient was motivated to feel even better beyond that. So they kept going. They kept pushing the methyl support supplementation. And then they started sliding again. They pushed the methylation too hard. So methylation, I attributed that. I had an interview earlier today. And to me, methyl supports of any type, of any genetic polymorphism, of any epigenetic problem, is icing on the cake. You want to make a cake. You've got various steps involved to make a cake. You've got your flour, water, eggs. Say you want to make carrot cake, and you got your carrots, you've got your sugar, and so on. There's instructions that you have to follow. There's bowls and tools that you need. There's mixers, there's ovens, and so on. All these things, just keep in mind, compare this with the human body. There's steps that you have to involve first, and that's mixing the flour with the water or the milk and the eggs. You blend all those together, and then you got to wait a little bit. You have to blend it really well. And only then can you add the sugar. And then you can add the sliced carrots, and then so on. Then you cook it. And then you prepare the icing, and then you put the icing on over. Now, I consider methylation the icing on the cake. Too much icing makes you sick, and icing by itself, who's going to want to eat that? I mean, my kids would probably go to town on it, but you definitely want to limit it. So in this situation, your last sentence is what clued me in. Have a lot of sinus drainage from mold and fungus allergies. That's where you want to start. Where's the mold coming from? Is it coming from your house? Is it coming from the other holes around you? Are they doing construction? I once had a patient come in who had to have her lung removed from Aspergillus being inside of her lung, and there was a library being built next to her where she was living. They dug this huge hole, and they released all this mold into the environment. Now, and she inhaled it and got into her lungs, and it was going into her brain as well. Terrifying. And so we were working with her on that. So mold doesn't have to be in your house in order to be a problem and pathogenic. So I would be identifying the source of the mold, and I'd be eliminating it. I'd also be looking at the fungus allergies and where that fungus is coming from. I'd also be avoiding all fungal-containing foods, and those can be nuts. It can be fermented foods. I'd be cheeses. I'd get rid of all those, and I'd be eating only fresh, cooked, non-processed foods and washed and ideally as local as possible. And I'd also be looking at your adrenal glands. If your adrenals are taxed and your cortisol levels are lower and your immune system is going to be more hyperactive and you'll be reacting to a lot more things. So I'd be working on that, obviously gluten and dairy free for a while. And I'd also be looking at hiring a doctor from the physician directory at signal.org. And there's a lot of physicians in that directory who can help you out. So that is a very good question. And I'd like to see how you're doing. So please comment sometime. You can email support@signal.org how you're feeling. And I want to keep tabs. And hopefully this information serves you. So there's a great article on mtgbar.net. I'm not sure if you have seen it or not. But there's an article called Preventing Methylfolate Side Effects. And this article is very useful because I go step by step in how to treat various things. So let me find it here. So this article here. So Preventing Methylfolate Side Effects is a very good article to read, and it gets into a lot of why you're not tolerating it. Okay, so electrolyte deficiency, we talked about adrenals, adaptogens, and so on. Glutathione is also needed. So there's a lot to it, to your question, and but I will move forward to the next most popular one here. The next most popular one here is from Annalisa Rodriguez, and she's homozygous 1298, MAO, COM-T, CVS, BNHMT. Now, note, you guys are starting with SNPs first. Okay, as a physician who understands how to work with genetic polymorphisms, SNPs are useful, but I want them last. When I did consultations back in the day, I focused on history first. History to me is what's most important because it's history which controls the genes. History is what controls the epigenetics, which is what control your genes. Just because you have a genetic polymorphism, which we all do, we all have genetic polymorphisms, every single one of us, and we have a lot of them. It's the epigenetic control is what makes us better or worse. And so you've got to do the foundations, and I know you're tired of me saying that. You want concrete examples, and I'm giving you concrete examples. But I'm also seeing you guys start with SNPs first. You got to stop doing that. There are doctors and health coaches and health professionals that say they focus on the SNPs, and that's kind of the sexy thing to do. It's the wrong thing to do. You use them. Okay, so I think something happened with the audio. So I heard a buzz, so you didn't miss much. So basically all I'm saying is you want to focus on the epigenetics. So when you guys are asking questions for the future, when you come on the next webinar, please give concrete history examples first. Give SNPs last. That's how you should work with your doctor too, and that's how your doctor should work with you. Work with SNPs last. So you have these homozygous MTHFR 1298 SNPs. You got MAO-A, COM-T, CBS, BHMT. Now, the other note that I should say is some of these SNPs are not clinically relevant. I know a lot of you are like, whoa, what are you talking about? But some of these SNPs, although they've been around for a while and doctors have been treating them for a while, they're not very clinically relevant. And I've been scrubbing the research with two other researchers looking for clinical relevance and working with patients back in the day, looking at my data in the past, and some of these SNPs are not relevant. The genes are relevant, the SNPs are not. Some of them are very relevant. So some of these MTHFR reports that you're getting where they've got 40 some odd pages of SNPs, or you're looking at a genetic genie, or you're looking at these other platforms, they're reporting SNPs. A lot of these SNPs are not clinically relevant, and they're causing more stress in you than need be. And they're also causing clinical confusion because you're trying to identify what all these SNPs do, and you're treating that SNP, you're treating that piece of paper rather than addressing the epigenetics. So the next sentence here, you spent 1 year with a functional medicine doctor and they had you detox. Okay, that's a problem. You cannot detox a patient without building a foundation first. If you detox a patient who's adrenally wiped out, whose diet is not good, whose environment is not clear, who doesn't understand that you have to slow the incoming toxins before you push the other toxins out. So if you've got a bucket of water and you've got a big opening on the top and a small opening on the bottom, okay, and your doctor is throwing in a bunch of water in the top, which is supposed to increase your detoxification ability, but you only have a small outlet on the bottom, your bucket's going to overflow. And that overflowing bucket are symptoms. You should not have symptoms when you detox. You should only feel better. The whole Herxheimer reaction when you detox is wrong. You should only feel better as you detox. If you're not feeling better when you detox or when you sauna, you're doing it too fast and you're doing it wrong. Okay? Don't push through it. Stop, reevaluate, reassess, redo it, and try again. But you can't detox until your incoming toxic load is evaluated. And I have an article on mtgbar.net that gets into this. So if you go to mtgbar.net and you type in toxins, okay, here, mtgbars are toxic, reduce body burden, okay? Reducing body burden is first. Reducing body burden is by incoming toxins, okay? That's what you want to focus on. So when you go to a doctor, they look at your sniffs and they detox you. Those two things are really common. Both of those are wrong two steps. You want to work on identifying stressors, toxicities, and the diet and the foods that you're eating. Those are the top three. And then the gut is also a big one. And some of you guys have been really struggling in this. SIBO is up and coming. And I think SIBO is up and coming because we have antibiotic resistance. We also have a lot of probiotic utilization. People are taking too many probiotics. We also have low stomach acid because people are stressed out. We're also eating a lot of unhealthier foods and so on. So there's a lot of risk for SIBO. And SIBO is becoming a problem. And that's causing a lot of issues. So your symptoms never got better, but actually much worse a year later. Yes, because your bucket is overflowing. Okay, when you're detoxing and the hole's too small, your bucket was overflowing and you felt like your methylation should have been addressed before any detox plan. Okay, now that's partially correct, but your foundation should have been addressed before you started a detox plan. Your adrenals should have been evaluated, your lifestyle, your environment should have been evaluated. Is your home toxic? Are you doing certain hobbies that are toxic? Environmental medicine is where you guys need to start. In environmental medicine, you can go to the American Academy of Environmental Medicine. These doctors are very highly trained in this. And I would go there looking for an environmental medicine doctor. I'd also be studying what environmental medicine is and trying to do saunas and eating as healthy as you can, trying to get the basics of nutrition and sleep and so on. Okay, those are the fundamentals. Do the fundamentals. You already know what the fundamentals are. Sleep, hydration, healthy diet, eating. Okay. And moderate exercise, not too hard, because that will cause issues. You have celiac and you have been gluten-free for 6 years. Okay, celiac, you've been gluten-free for 6 years. I don't think you're 6 years old. So you've got a lifetime of gut damage. So from the gluten that you ate prior to 6 years ago. So you got to heal your gut. You got to be supporting glutamine, demulcents, probiotics, and aloe and so on. So you need to be taking something to heal your gut, something like optimal GI powder or whatever you feel that's useful for you. And you take in small amounts and you work up. You also look for what foods you can tolerate. You got to eat more cooked foods rather than raw foods, because raw foods for a person with celiac or a gut dysfunction is going to be harder to process. So you got to eat foods, and I like Ayurvedic foods. There's Ayurvedic cooking, which is very useful. Going to an Ayurvedic practitioner and identifying if you're Vata, Pitta, or Kapha, and identifying foods which support those doshas is very useful. And that's where I got my start in Ayurveda when I was half dead in India. That's what brought me to this whole medicine, which I feel is amazing. So Ayurveda is really useful. So heal your gut. You started an anti-inflammatory protocol a year ago in low FODMAP. Now I seem to have many food sensitivities, Cyrex labs, which limit my ability to heal the leaky gut. Exactly. The last few months, I've had a fiery rash from head to toe, exhaustion, and other symptoms. Many docs, many tests, no answers. I have chemical sensitivity and histamine issues now too. I'm low on a low histamine diet, adopt a daily meditation, and see a little improvement. Where should someone like me start with a new doc? Should I focus on addressing methylation or detox first? Now, I would focus on the adrenals and adaptogens and the stress You have a lot of stress surrounding your food. Your diet is very restricted. I'd find a doc who specializes in healing the gut, and they are hard to find. There's very few doctors that I know who can treat the gut very well. And treating the gut, I can do the basics, but I can't do the, sorry, a friend of mine just walked by. I can't focus on healing the gut nearly as well as some other people. So, but the basics are there. Identifying SIBO is important. If the bacteria are wrong in your gut, then you're going to have issues. There is 100 bacteria cells compared to your one in your body. So 101 bacteria. Those are bad odds. So unless you can identify which bacteria are in your gut and you keep working on methylation, you keep working on detox, then these bacteria are just going to continue ruling you. So I would be focusing on a comprehensive digestive stool analysis. I would be ordering a CDSA from Doctor's Data or whatever lab that your doctor likes to work with. I personally like the CDSA with OMP times 3 from Doctor's Data. I find this test to be very good and the team there very useful. Okay, so I would start there. And I'd also order a hormone panel from probably precisionhormones.com. And that's precisionanalytics.com or precisionhormones.com. It's a urinary hormone test, and that can be useful as well. But again, I would start with the gut first. And I'd also apply castor oil over your entire abdomen. And I'd look at for environmental things which are taxing you and stresses in your life. If you have stress in your life, then taking adaptogens like optimal adrenal or adrenal cortex in the morning can really help you out too. So supporting the adrenals is very important. And you got to do the basics there. So I would not be supporting methylation, and I would not be supporting detox first. I'd be supporting the adrenals, and I'd be supporting the gut function, and I'd be evaluating the environment first. That's where I think you should be looking at. And the other thing is, too, that I see very commonly is I replied to you on Facebook here, and I said that, you know, I'd like to know what your other detoxification steps are. Now, there's different phases of detoxification, and I slowed down there because it's simplifying the situation. There's not really a phase one, phase two, and a phase three in the liver. It doesn't work that simply. There's actually, it depends on the compound and the situation. So for simplicity's sake, I'm going to say phase one, two, and three because that's what people understand. So if just like the bucket with the hole in the bottom and the big hole on the top and you're filling it up. So the bucket, I'm trying to see if I had a desk here or something to use, but I don't. So if you got a bucket with a big hole in the top and a small hole in the bottom, okay, let's say the top is a phase one, okay? So you're pushing phase one really hard, okay, trying to dump all those toxins out. But phase two is the little circle. Most people have a, seems what I see clinically, it's a lot of people are pushing their phase one hard and their phase two is not moving fast enough. So what's going to happen? The bucket's going to overflow. You push phase one too hard, you're going to get problems. You need to support phase two. You need to be looking at sulfur-containing compounds to support phase two. And if you use vitamin Bs and methylfolate and methylcobalamin, that's going to support more phase one. So that's another issue of supporting people with methylfolate and methylcobalamin first, is that's going to be pushing their phase one detoxification fast, and then their phase two system is going to be sluggish. So you've got to get their phase two movement faster. Now, another quick way to support phase two is with proper urination, and which requires proper hydration with clean water, and it requires bowel movements at least once a day, ideally 2 to 3 to 4 times a day. Now I'm talking form stools. And some of you are like, God, really? 3 to 4 times a day? Yes. When I was an athlete for the University of Washington on the crew team, and I was super fit, and I was healthy, and I was young, I was having solid, good, well-formed bowel movements about 4 times a day or more. But I was also eating a lot because I had to maintain my fuel and my muscle mass. So you want to have at least one bowel movement a day. If you're not you're reabsorbing those toxins. So again, the foundations of the gut are important. I cannot tell you how many people I've worked with who have inadequate bowel movements who are reabsorbing their toxins and causing problems. And I used to do consults with people with MTHFR. They would call me up and want to know about how to treat their MTHFR. And I talk about their lifestyle and their diet and their bowel movements, and they yell at me. They really yell at me on the phone. Say, you're not treating my MTHFR. Yes, I am. Why aren't you talking about methylfolate? How much to take? Because that's not how you do it. You do it from the ground up. Okay. So when you're a member of seekinghealth.org, there is that practical applications video from the UK. It's the practical applications of methylation dysfunction. And that video really gets into the core essentials of where to start. And to me, it's my best video to date of where to start as a physician and even where to start as a general patient or general public. And it's very easy to understand, and there's steps involved, and I define certain things for you guys. So that video is a good one to watch. The folate metabolism video is also useful, and a lot of you guys have probably seen that one already. There's some on YouTube, but my most current and most useful is that UK video, and that's the presentation I did this spring. So let's go to another question here. So again, you got to support phase two before you support phase one. But before you support phase two, you got to support phase three, and that's the elimination of these compounds, which requires proper hydration and proper bowel movements. Let's see if we can find another top comment here. Okay, yeah, all these comments are starting with SNFs first. But I will talk about this quickly. So this is from Brenda Scott. I have homozygous COMT, two of them in MAO A. Now, when you let me know you're homozygous for MAO A, I want to know which allele, okay, T or G. It's important because it tells me if it's fast or slow. Homozygous depends on the rich reporting company. So to me, I don't know if you're burning through your serotonin and your histamine quickly or slowly. And as a woman, you're going to be moving through it faster because MAO-A is an X-linked enzyme. So after this question, I'm going to get to the chat questions because I want to honor you guys' time here while being on. But I want to talk about this question because you've struggled with insomnia your entire life. You're homozygous COMT, and you're homozygous MAO-A, and you're heterozygous MTHFR. And doctors got you on melatonin, magnesium, almost a gram, cavanase, four capsules, 5-HTP, 500 milligrams, glycine powder, one tablespoon, phosphatidylserine, 300 milligrams, doxylamine, succinate, don't know what that is. So these supplements help me get to sleep most nights. Boy, I hope so. That's a heavy hitter. Without them, I might sleep every other night. My struggle is I still can't get to sleep before 12:30 to 1. I'm religious about having good bedtime routine, no blue light, in bed by 10, nothing to excite me, low sleeping temperatures, etc. What do you suggest to help me to get to sleep faster at night? Also, I struggle with chronic infections, including Lyme, and diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome 24 years ago. Do autoimmune paleo diets? Okay, autoimmune paleo diet, that's probably low carb. Even though you are taking 500 milligrams of 5-HTP, which is a lot, and you've got 3 milligrams of melatonin on board. I don't know if it's time to release melatonin. Melatonin will make you sleepy, but it won't really help you stay asleep. The 5-HTP, I'd be looking at a slow release 5-HTP, a sustained release. So if you're taking 500 milligrams of serotonin or 5-HTP to make your serotonin, you as a female and possibly as your MAO-A, you might be burning through that serotonin into melatonin very quickly and not getting a sustained sleep. So I'd be looking at a timed, extended, sustained release 5-HTP, and they are out there. I'm working on a 200 milligram right now and for just this particular SNP. And I brought this case up because this is a common problem. You're not alone here. And this is a case, this is a beautiful case of where SNPs come in very useful. Because you have insomnia, you have your entire life, not just recently, your entire life, and you have to supplement heavily with it. And the SNPs are absolutely associated with insomnia. So this situation is useful, but I also would be evaluating heavy metals. You need to be evaluating with your doctor heavy metal toxicity and possibly run a red blood cell heavy metal test from doctor's data, and then also a provoked challenge heavy metal test with your doctor where you possibly take something like DMSA and see how many heavy metals you eliminate. And I would be careful with that. You got to make sure your liver is healthy and your digestive system is healthy. And I would also, since you have chronic fatigue and your paleo diet is very high protein. And if you're high protein, let me pull this up again and move this out of here. Reduce this. So what happens if you're high protein is you are making a lot of dopamine and norepinephrine. So here's your tyrosine, okay? So tyrosine, you get in meat, you get in your protein, and on a paleo diet, you're getting a lot of protein, which then is feeding in your dopamine and your norepinephrine, which keep you alert and awake. So I would stop eating protein, probably in your situation. I get your protein that you require in the morning and mid-afternoon and early afternoon, and I would, or that didn't make sense, but I would stop eating protein probably around, I would say, 4 o'clock in your situation. Why? Because you are going to be taking that protein and you are going to be making your dopamine and norepinephrine, and it's going to be in your system longer than most people because you have a slow COMT, you have a slow MAO-A possibly, or fast, I don't know yet, and you're going to be keeping your dopamine elevated. And then over here, your serotonin is going to melatonin, supposed to be. Now, you also said you have chronic fatigue. Vitamin B5 is very common in those with adrenal fatigue, which then translates to chronic fatigue. So pantothenic acid in the morning, I did not see that in your supplement recommendation. I'd be taking pantothenic acid or adrenal cortex or both. I'd probably be taking adrenal cortex in the morning with your breakfast, and I'd be taking pantothenic acid, 500 milligrams with breakfast. I'd stop eating your protein about 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and I'd eat a dinner of quinoa or wild yams and a salad for dinner, and I would take your routine supplements and I would go to bed. And I'd also be supporting, I'd also be going to bed with probably some SAMe as well. So one SAMe capsule prior to bed. And I'd be taking liposomal glutathione along with liposomal vitamin C in the morning as well. And I think that would be pretty supportive. And I would continue doing your infrared sauna, and I'd be making sure that you're doing your electrolytes. And you say you also take one capsule of OptiDetox. Any more than that, you can't sleep. So that's interesting. So there's something that's causing you to not sleep. I look at the nutrients. I don't have time now, but I'd look at the ingredients of OptiDetox, and I'd be looking at that to see what's going on and possibly even stop that and just do the sauna and skip the OptiDetox. But you got to talk with your doctor on that. Okay, so I have a few minutes left. So what do you consider high protein and low carb amounts? Great question. So high protein, I would say anything higher than 0.8 grams of carbs, no, sorry, 0.8 grams of protein per 2.2 pounds of body weight. So basically 0.8, so you could narrow that to about around a gram of protein per 2 pounds of body weight. So I'm 200 pounds and I shouldn't be eating more than about 90 grams of protein a day or so, okay? If I do more than that, then I would say that's too much protein. Now, the protein is used by the body for a lot of things. It makes enzymes with it. It makes collagen, you know, it supports a lot of things, okay? But it's not really stored fuel. So you have to be eating more fat and healthy fat. I'd be looking at MCT oil, and I'd be looking at some whole quality good carbs like quinoa, wild yams, sweet potatoes, things with a lot of fiber in them and carbs are useful, and a lot more fat. Be looking at the ketogenic diet. Be reading the book called Keto Clarity, that you cannot go on a ketogenic diet unless your ability to utilize fat is addressed. So you need to make sure that you have adequate bile and your liver is functioning. You have to make sure that your adrenals are functioning well, and you have to make sure that your electrolyte balance is good and your overall, and you know how to do it, because a lot of people, including myself, I did ketogenic for a while, and not that long, but I went into a carbohydrate binge, because ketogenic diet is very low carb, and then you get into low tryptophan, and you get low serotonin, and when that happens, you reach for the carbs, because it's the carbs that provide your serotonin, and your melatonin, you feel better. Problem is, and you keep binging on it, and it's a vicious cycle, and you can't get out of it. So you can supplement with 5-HTP, or you can shift in the evening in the ketogenic diet to eat some more of your tryptophan-containing foods. That's pretty useful. Somebody put it in there. Are there notes for this webinar to follow along? Somebody is saying would be best to read. Yes, I hear you. I hear you. Some of the videos I have on YouTube, there's a lot of things which I'm addressing now. Can't fall asleep, can't stay asleep, can't wake up, sensitive to glutamates, exercise-induced asthma, where to start. All these things are on YouTube now, and they're free, and those videos are transcribed, and we're working on that now, getting them all written out with my content management team, and we're doing a great job for that. I've shot about 15 videos, about 4 minutes long or so, and they're all written out. They're also in podcast, iTunes, they're on YouTube. So you can listen, you can read, or you can watch, or you can do all three. It's all there. And they're going to be on CNL.org as well. So let's see. My daughter has adrenal fatigue with salivary cortisol barely on the line, even with adrenal glandular support. She eats food she prepares from scratch, balanced protein, fats, high fiber diet. How long is this one? Ooh, boy, that's really long. It's too long. Sorry, Irene, I'll have to skip that, but I wish I had more time. Oral lichen planus, stress and immune dysfunction and allergies. So lichen planus, liquid vitamin A can be really useful. You can apply it right to the site. Liquid vitamin A, you could also use a zinc lozenge. And I'd also be looking at liposomal vitamin C and glutathione, so supporting the immune system. And I'll also be looking at stress. So stress is suppressing your immune system, which is causing lichen planus to come up. And so we want to hit that with the immune support, which is vitamin A and zinc. Again, liquid vitamin A you can put right in your mouth. And careful with the toxicity, especially if you're pregnant. If you're pregnant, don't exceed 5,000 micrograms. I think one drop in our liquid vitamin A drops is pretty potent. I forget what it is. But talk with your doctor about that. You can take quite a bit of vitamin A, actually. It's not as toxic as a lot of people think it is, but it's still something to be cautious with. And you can address it right to the site of lichen planus, along with a zinc lozenge, liposomal vitamin C and glutathione. And then I'd be working with your adrenals as well. And I'd also be getting on a gluten-free diet. Sorry, that's across the board. All of you guys, everybody on this planet needs to be on a gluten-free diet. They spray wheat with glyphosate 5 days prior to harvest, which is disgusting and disturbing. They literally spray Roundup on the wheat fields to kill it, let it dry out, and then they harvest it. They do the same with corn and soy. And some others. So getting organic is important. It's very, very important now. Methylfolate can also be useful for that as well, but I wouldn't be doing the methylfolate until you read the article on preventing methylfolate side effects. Let's see. Does everyone who had MTHFR end up with issues? Okay, we all have the MTHFR enzyme. Without the MTHFR enzyme, we're dead. We don't live. Okay, so we all have the MTHFR enzyme. We don't all typically have it as problematic. But this is a great question. Does everyone who have the MTHFR, I'll say polymorphism, I'm editing, does everyone who have the MTHFR polymorphism end up with issues? No. If they have normal homocysteine, okay, normal homocysteine is an old dated marker which is incomplete. The best marker to use is SAW, acetylacetyl homocysteine. You can get that from doctor's data. Doctor's data checks their methylation profile. In the methylation profile, they look at SAM, they look at SAW, they look at SAM-SAW ratio, and they look at homocysteine, and they look at cysteine and methionine. That test is very useful because if your homocysteine is normal, and define normal, because the lab level is now really high, normal to me is around 7 in adult. So if it's any higher than 7, then it's too high. It's nothing to be freaked out about if it's 7 to 10, but we want to get it down to 7. Okay, so that's where you want to be shooting for in an adult. In kids, it's naturally lower. It's probably around 4 or 5 in young kids because their methylation cycle is really burning up because they're growing so fast and they're using up a lot of methylation. So methylation levels between 3 to 5 in a child is normal. Okay, now, if your homocysteine is fine, your SAW can be elevated. And if your SAW is elevated, that's a problem. SAW is S-adenosyl homocysteine. Let me show you this. This is a great question. The short answer is no. People with MTHFR polymorphisms across the board are not an issue. And if you look at, it's actually, this video is on YouTube, and it's got like 80,000 views or something. It's old. If you look at the Chinese, Hispanics, and the Americans, we're all three susceptible to having children with neural tube defects if we have the MTHFR homozygous C677 variant. That's been looked at, okay? So if a person is homozygous C677, they're homozygous for it, they're Chinese, or they're Hispanic, or they're an American, their risk for neural tube defects, sky high, all right? That's why folic acid was put into our enriched crappy foods. Now, if you fly to beautiful Italy, 50% of the Italians have homozygous C677T, nearly. A lot of them do. They are not at risk for having children with neural tube defects. Why? Big family culture, healthy eating, a lot of greens, a lot of vacation time, living in a beautiful environment, living in a clean environment, and their risk goes down. It's epigenetic control, just what I've been telling you. And that's a perfect example. The Italians, even though they have a C677 homozygous variant, tend to have children without neural tube defects, even without folic acid supplementation, because they're consuming methylfolate from their leafy greens and they're eating a well-balanced diet. And they're living in a good environment and their stress levels are less. Americans are go, 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 go. And so are the Japanese and other cultures. The Italians, man, they're pretty laid-back people, right? So let's look at SAM and SAW here. I got to wrap up a little bit, but I want to show you this. It's important. And I address this in a lot of other presentations, which you can see on YouTube, and also members of CNL.org can see for free. So let me make this bigger here. Okay, so here's your homocysteine, okay? Here's MTHFR. So here, say you have MTHFR 677. You don't eat your leafy greens, but you supplement with your methylfolate and your methylcobalamin. These two nutrients come up here, along with your homocysteine. It's able to convert it back into methionine, and with some magnesium, it converts it into SAMe, okay? Your SAMe then runs off, and it makes your cell membranes, it makes your creatine, your neurotransmitters, it gets rid of your neurotransmitters, it makes your histamine, it gets rid of your estrogens, it does a lot of stuff. After it does that a lot of stuff, that SAMe becomes SAW. And SAW shuts your methylation down. It turns it off. So if your SAW levels are too high, all these methyltransferase enzymes don't work. So if these methyltransferase enzymes don't work, what's that mean? COMT is a methyltransferase enzyme. It uses SAM as a cofactor to get rid of dopamine. And if SAW is elevated, SAW will block the COMT enzyme more favorably than SAM. So just because your homocysteine level is fine doesn't mean you're out of the woods. And there are research papers, which I bring up in the part one conference on signal.org and part two, I believe. Just because your homocysteine is fine doesn't mean you're out of the woods. Your SAW has got to be fine. Your SAW has to be lower than your SAM. Because these enzymes, these methyltransferase enzymes, will bind SAW better than they do SAM. It fits stronger. It's a better key. It sits there more favorably. Okay? So that is a big, great question. Now, there's a lot of questions unanswered, but there is a lot of questions going to be answered in October at our Denver conference, and there's going to be a whole day of me going over all these diagrams, how to discuss various clinically relevant things. So here I'd be talking about the impact of stress, how it causes immune intolerance and can cause cancer or contribute to cancer, not cause cancer, and how stress reduces that. And then how various heavy metals and so on will work. So basically I'm going to be looking at these diagrams here. I'm going to be talking about patient scenarios. Your patient's got asthma. What's going on? Well, their adenosine levels are become high. The adenosine then backlogs in SAW, which then increases their histamine, and their ability to generate ATP goes down because they got elevated arsenic, and it's inhibiting their Krebs cycle. And we've got to do other things here, and we've got to support the methylation with methylcobalamin and methylfolate. We can't do that before we do other things. So we'll be taking clinical examples and applying it to these pathway planners in a stepwise fashion, in an interactive fashion, where doctors will have to put on their thinking caps and use these pathway planners to any condition known to man and woman. Okay? So that's the beautiful thing about these pathway planners, is you can see the patient, see the disturbance on the diagram instead of labeling the patient with, oh, you have Parkinson's disease. No, you don't. You have a dysfunction in your neurological pathways and your ability to get rid of reactive oxygen species and your mitochondria. How does that all fit together? How does it work? We show you. Now, also on Sunday, we have case studies presented by various doctors. We've got Dr. Paul Anderson, who's brilliant, lectures worldwide as well. That guy is living on airplanes. Bernarda Zanker presents routinely for SpectraCell. Dr. Eric Balkovich is just a genius. This guy has taken every course available on signal.org, and he is researching left and right. He and I are dialoguing all the time about what's going on with this mechanism, what's going on with nitric oxide synthase, what happens to arginine, what's going on when our patients eat too much protein in the ammonia pathway, what's going on with Parkinson's disease. So he and I are dialoguing all the time. He's got a great patient case study. Dr. Neil Nathan, this handsome fella right here, is one of the fathers of methylation, and he is presenting a case on chronic fatigue and Lyme. And Mike Muscles will be presenting. Actually, he's not presenting. He's just the host, and he's a brilliant host, very charismatic fellow. Sayer G and Dr. Kelly Brogan will be discussing vaccine safety, because a lot of us with genetic polymorphisms and screwed up methylation and epigenetics are very susceptible to vaccine damage. And how do we get around that? What's the deal, and why are vaccines doing it? These two have spent thousands of hours literally researching vaccine safety, and they're bringing it to you scientifically. Dr. Susie Cohen here, she's a pharmacist, and she's going to be presenting the harmful effects of medications on our patients and what they do to methylation dysfunction and the pathway planners. Now, to get more savings for the Tricon 15, to get early bird pricing, you can save 20% as a health professional using this password coupon code during checkout. You can save 20% on your registration by attending the webinar. Thank you for that. And there's quite a number of docs already signed up, and this is going to be a great networking environment, and the food is going to be great. The teaching is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's an interactive conference. This is not a conference where I'm standing there for 2 days and telling you stuff. This is a conference where you come and you ask questions, and it's also a conference where you troubleshoot all day on Thursday, for example, and you're going to be networking with doctors on how to solve these clinical scenarios, which I am drawing up for you. You give me the answers, and I give you my feedback, and we interact and we learn together. And Thursday and Friday, I'm talking about cell membrane function dysfunction, also mitochondrial health, and the new findings which I've got now, which are mind-blowing. So I'm really excited to be sharing these finally. It's been holed up in my research database for too long. And this is the only conference as well that is absolutely guaranteed. So if you don't like the information that we're presenting to you, just call my team, we refund you. It's that simple. I believe in my work. I believe in the doctors that are presenting and the information they're providing you guys. So I'm excited for it. Now, to get more tools as well, at signal.org, we have a membership, and I've blown this up for you guys. I want to provide the most tools as I can. And so now with the membership, which is very inexpensive, I think it's only like $10 a month for the general public, and I think it's $20 for doctors, you get these four videos for free. The practical clinical application, this used to be $75. This one used to be $75, and so did I think this one was around $50. These are all free, and this one was $50, all free. And I had to fly to London with my team. You had to fly to London if you wanted to hear this. This is the conference that I want you guys to watch first. This is a great layperson and where to start as a clinician video. And I was on my A game for this presentation. Some days I'm not very good. This one I was very pleased with. And this is the one that had 100% approval rating. So start with this one. Now, this presentation on cancer is very interesting because cancer is not a noun. It's a verb. It's a process. And so I point out the biochemical mechanisms and the genetic mechanisms which predispose us to cancer. And then what do we do about it? What markers can we look at? How can we identify it in our patients? What should we do next? What's the common deficiency that all cancers have? What are common deficiencies that all patients undergoing chemotherapy have? And the number one deficiency that all patients undergoing chemotherapy is niacin. That is a big one. So, and the prenatal conference course. As many of you know, my passion for what I wake up every morning for is to optimize the lives of unborn children. Because if we can do that, the next generation and this planet is going to be much, much healthier. And I, as a soccer coach and a basketball coach and a father of three boys, it pains me to see these children growing up with problems. And when my son comes up to me, "Dad, does that boy have a problem?" They see it. Say, "Yes, son, that boy has this problem and that problem. Dad, can you fix them?" "Yeah, I can probably fix them." And they're like, "Well, can you go help them?" It's like, "Well, no, I can't help him right now, but I'm trying to help everyone I can." And so my goal is to get all this information out to you guys as much as possible. And on our YouTube channel now, at SHEI YouTube, you are going to get a lot of information here. And that's in our learning center here. Exercise-induced asthma is freely available to everybody because as a soccer coach, I see this. And it's a big problem, and I reversed it before by the kids that I've coached. Gone, absolutely gone. And that's a beautiful thing to see. And it's increasing in prevalence. I mean, when you see 20% of your soccer team have exercise-induced asthma, that's a problem. So you can nip that in the bud. It's actually pretty easy to do. So these four videos are included in your membership, and I want to help out you guys as much as possible. I'm doing these webinars for free. The recordings go into the Learning Center archived for all time's sake. There's also a forum, which is not too interactive, but I'm trying to get it more interactive with people. And I think it's the more members we get in there, the more interactive it will be. Okay. So I thank you for your questions. There's a lot more questions I have not addressed, a whole slew of them, but Rose is taking all of your questions down here, all of them, and put them in an Excel file, and I will be looking at those, because what I'm going to be doing as time allows is I'm going to be developing a full-on course of exactly where to start and saying, heal the gut. How do you heal the gut? Heal the adrenals. How do you heal the adrenals? I'm just going step by step by step, because I started with MTHFR when I found the genetics, but you can't start there. You got to really identify where to start. And that's my main focus for you guys. Thank you for your time. We keep on developing. We keep on learning. And I want you guys to get the information you need. So becoming a member at seekinghealth.org is a great place to start. Like-minded individuals get all these four videos for free. Supports my research, allows me to hire more research assistants and develop. And I also would love to see health professionals at ShyCon 2015 in beautiful Denver, Colorado this October. So register today. This only lasts for 24 hours, this early registration coupon. And really, really want to see you there. You basically have no loss. If you don't like it, ask for your money back. And I guarantee it's going to transform your practice when you use it and when you see these other doctors. And I'm excited for it. So thank you all. And I will see you again next time. Take care.